In the early 20th century, American aristocrats experimented with cannabis. They'd never heard the word marijuana. They'd dabble with cannabis in food, drink, as topical oils and in aromas. Cannabis was a cash crop grown on some of the most prominent plantations in the South. It was a luxury item, and then people started realizing its health benefits. The pharmaceutical industry was way into cannabis, and the companies that we know today, as Bristol-Myers Squibb and Eli Lilly, were leading the way in cannabis extract research and development.
Okay, something must have happened between now and then.
Oh, yeah, but even more, cannabis was used to make ropes, sails, even clothing. I'm not saying cannabis was cotton, but it was a prominent and versatile crop. Heck, even George Washington was growing cannabis in the 1700s at Mount Vernon.
Okay, keep going. I need to hear more.
Well, the image of the cannabis plant began to change between 1910 and 1920. A violent civil war in Mexico propelled roughly 890,000 legal Mexican immigrants into the United States during this decade. And, like many wealthy Southern aristocrats, cannabis was popular among the Mexican immigrants. A common way to partake of the plant for these immigrants was to smoke it, and this was new. In Mexico, cannabis was called marijuana, spelled with an H, not with a J.
Okay, so that's where this word marijuana comes from, I guess.
It is. Now, fast forward to 1930, and the Depression was hitting the United States hard after World War I, and jobs were tough to come by. We all know political plan A, when jobs aren't plentiful, is to...
blame immigrants.
Bingo. Now enter Harry Anslinger. Now, Harry Anslinger was the first director of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics in the U.S.
So, he was the first drug czar.
You got it. The first drug czar, but as I read about Harry Anslinger, I think he might have been more of an immigration official than a drug czar. This hateful and racist man did most of the work in making cannabis illegal in the United States. Back then, nobody wanted a bunch of Mexican immigrants in our country taking away jobs from decent American citizens. We had to remove them.
Wait, you said this was back in the 1930s? Or are you talking about 2017?
I'm still in 1930, but indeed, the more things change, the more things stay the same. We had to get rid of the Mexican immigrants, so Harry Anslinger, the drug czar, painted a picture of Mexican Americans as vile, offensive, drug criminals that brought marijuana into our country.
Marijuana, the thing that now is a criminal drug.
Yeah. So dear old Harry thought that it sounded foreign and a bit scary. This is the first time the word marijuana was used nationally, and it came from the Spanish word for cannabis. So on a national scale, Anslinger's venting about Mexicans bringing this foreign drug that he's calling marijuana into America, and it's the same drug that's always been here.
That's pretty tricky. He's calling it marijuana instead of cannabis. People think it's different. Very clever trick, and it sure worked.
Harry testified before Congress saying, and I quote, "Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind. Most marijuana smokers are Negroes, Hispanics, Filipinos, and entertainers. Their satanic music, jazz, and swing result from marijuana usage," end quote.
So this just sounds like another tool used in the steady march of white supremacy in this country.
Right. And sadly, it gets worse. On posters distributed throughout the South, Harry Anslinger claimed that marijuana, and I quote, "makes darkies think they're as good as white men. The primary reason to outlaw marijuana is its effect on the degenerate races," end quote.
Ugh. So this is another troubling example of racism and the public policy that can flow out of it. and no one realizes it's racist, but what does this have to do with sports?
Ah, I'm glad you asked. There's an interesting alliance being formed in our country between mothers and football players.
And this is all about cannabis?
It's all about cannabis. Let's go deep.
Welcome to Going Deep, Sports in the 21st Century from the studios of Blue Ridge Public Radio, NPR for Western North Carolina. I'm Dr. Marcia Mount Shoup.
And I'm Coach John Shoup.
John's coached at the highest levels of the game of football for 26 years.
And Marcia is an author, theologian, and minister.
We're Team Shoup, and we're glad you've joined us to go deep into some of the most pressing issues of our time.
On Going Deep, we go beyond sound bites and highlight reels.
Hello?
Hey, Jake.
Yeah.
Hey, this is John Shoup. How you doing, man?
Hey, good, John. How you doing?
I'm good. Jake Plummer played for 10 years in the NFL. In 1997, he was the second-round pick of the Arizona Cardinals, coming out of Arizona State University. At ASU, he was a first-team All-American after leading his team to the Rose Bowl, and he was my favorite quarterback coming out of the draft. After 6 years with the Cards, I tried to sign him as a free agent when I was with the Chicago Bears, but instead he joined the Denver Broncos, where he played the final 4 years of his super career. Jake's one of the most athletic quarterbacks to ever play the game, and has got more ball and stick sense in his pinky finger than most of us have in our entire body. Jake's also a good man, and he's deeply, deeply respected by his peers. Hey, welcome to Going Deep, Jake.
Hey, thank you, John. I appreciate that, and a very nice intro. Made me feel good there.
Prior to our discussion, okay, as I prepared for this discussion, I should say, when I heard the word marijuana, my mind raced towards a vision of comedic characters, like a Cheech and Chong in East L.A. smoking joints the size of cigars, or the classic burnout of our generation, Spicoli, the character of a young Sean Penn in the classic cult Fast Times at Ridgemont High. What visions come to your mind when you hear the word marijuana nowadays, Jake?
Nowadays, you know, that's definitely changed, but I understand, you know, that some of that perception is still there, you know, what marijuana and that term stands for, you know, hippies and, you know, the burnouts and surfers and guys that are not excelling or changing the world, but instead are, you know, surfing and chilling out and being happy. So nowadays, you know, it seems that stigma is changing, and I think more so because of the knowledge people are gaining and the education and what limited research is being done, you know, it can be done on the plant and all of its medicinal benefits. And I think that people are starting to open their minds a little bit to the possibility of using a natural medicine and the perception of it being a harmful, horrible gateway drug. I think it's changing. It's becoming more of a medicine that's helping people find relief from years and years of pain and suffering and do it the natural way.
I am a byproduct of the 80s, and so I grew up with the commercials with the egg in the frying pan and, you know, the DARE campaign in school, and so of course my thinking about cannabis, marijuana, was extremely negative, and that it would, you know, you'd be a bum if you used it, and you know, only losers use that, and you'd lose your brain cells and probably go on to do harder drugs, and you know, just kind of all the propaganda surrounding that.
Heather Jackson is the founder and CEO of the Realm of Caring Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization based in Colorado Springs, Colorado. The Realm of Caring has 15 employees and works with over 40,000 families worldwide. It works to improve lives through research, education, and advocacy. Realm of Caring teaches the world, really, about cannabis and its many, many uses. They help clients select products that match their needs, and they tell the truth about the cannabis plant.
That's the really the only way to overcome the misinformation is to educate yourself, to take a look at the actual research that exists, and then to listen to people who use it as therapy and gain an understanding a little bit more about the positive effects it's having in their lives. So I think education is really the only way to overcome such an ingrained ignorance over these last, you know, some 75 years that it's been prohibited.
Being in Colorado, where they, you know, started this whole thing with medicinal and now recreational marijuana, I've seen, you know, how I've watched it happen and watched how people have, you know, gone about their business and worked full time, do their thing, and are upstanding citizens and good neighbors and good people. Yet they've chosen to go the natural route with a form of medicine and relief from some of their pain and suffering, like I said, instead of choosing, you know, pharmaceutical drugs. And it's been interesting to watch. I'm definitely intrigued, as you said, you know, intrigued and watching how this perception has changed.
In an article on Bleacher Report written by a guy, Mike Tanier, it was a wonderful article about you and your connection to this cause. But he quoted you as saying, "I was miserable. I was mad. I was pissed off. Why the hell did I play football?" That's when I started to understand the medical side of marijuana and cannabis to help with the pain, and also a lot of deep thoughts when you're lying in bed. Could you talk us through some of the particulars of what the use of medical marijuana or cannabis looks like?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you bring that up, and that's when I really didn't know much about it. Didn't know, you know, really the relief that it could be. I always kind of associated it with partying or being at a concert or, you know, that whole stereotype of smoking marijuana and deadbeats and, you know, stoners. That's what they were called back when I was in school, in junior high and high school. And I knew better. I knew people. I had some people around us that used marijuana or used cannabis, that were good people, that were smart, that were not, you know, the egg frying in a pan saying, "This is your brain, this is your brain on drugs." Some drugs do that, but I knew that I kind of had an education about marijuana that it didn't fry your brain. You know, it wasn't as detrimental as people were making it out to be. And when I was laying in bed and having those thoughts of like, "What the heck? Why did I do this to my body?" That's when I tried some medical, because in Colorado it was legal. So I got a card and I went to a doctor and everything was legit. It was a doctor who listened to me and checked me out and said, "You know, you've got all these pains and aches and pains. You basically have arthritis at a young age, you know, at 39 so he gave me a card and I started, you know, using during hip surgeries. I had both hips operated on, not replaced, but I had my labrums reattached and some cartilage, some microfracture done to grow back some cartilage and some little bone spurs shaved off. And it was my first time being under the knife, first time having to do a rehab like that. And I was pretty miserable because I'd never been injured seriously in my career. I was able to always play or maybe take a couple games here and there to heal up and get back on the field. So that was a real trying time for me. And, you know, the medical card and the cannabis, it helped me, you know, calm down my brain and my thoughts and gave me a chance to avoid that pain and not be in such, you know, achy feeling every day and having headaches. And the day it really changed, well, not the day, but when it really changed is when I got exposed to the hemp oil.
Well, what was Zakai's path towards cannabis use?
Yeah, Zakai started having seizures when he was only 4 months old. So I was still on maternity leave, and he started doing these little movements that I didn't even recognize as seizures. And when we went in for his six-month well baby checkup, I think the doctor knew exactly what it was because he ordered an EEG, which is just a scan to look at the brain waves and the electrical activities in the brain. And Zakai was definitely having seizures. And at that time, at the very beginning, he was having a couple dozen episodes a day. And he just got progressively worse over the years. And he tried and many different pharmaceuticals. They failed him every single time. So 17 different regimens of pharmaceuticals were offered to us over the almost decade that he was really, really struggling. And we were receiving hospice palliative services at the time. So Zakai was, his prognosis was poor, and he was having, on average, about 200 seizures a day at that time. And it was our hospice counselor, actually, who mentioned another family that was having success. So she said, you know, I can't recommend this. Of course, I'm sure she was afraid she'd lose her job, but she was brave enough to say, here are some phone numbers. And by July of 2012, we had started treatment for Zakai. And his response was just incredible. It was so amazing. His first dose, and this kid was having seizures, like full body electrocutions every 2 to 10 minutes while he slept. The 200 I mentioned is what he would have during the day. So then he would go to sleep, and you would think his little brain would get some rest at that time, but it just, you know, it wasn't the case. And I gave him his first dose, and I'm just staring at him, just waiting for the seizures to start as he falls asleep, and they didn't. And he didn't have any seizures for that first 48 hours, and I thought,
wow,
you've got to be kidding me. Yeah. And it did take us about, they came back, but they were less frequent, they were less severe, and within 3 months, his seizures completely remitted and remained that, so for almost 4 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So, of course, after, you know, you've tried to keep your kid alive for almost a decade, and then all of a sudden this plant and everything that you thought you knew about it works, it sort of rearranges your life. And so I just had to find the nearest mountaintop and start screaming.
Yeah, no this kidding.
This is an option. And the more I've researched it, it's a very safe option. It's a good option.
You know, a lot of people don't even know that there's different plants in the marijuana strain. There's marijuana that has THC, tetrahydrocannabidiol, that makes you have that euphoric kind of high feeling. And some people really don't like that feeling. But then there's hemp that has a big agricultural use. In fact, back before the 1930s, it was a really prevalent crop across the U.S. until they lumped it together with marijuana. And people call hemp ditch weed because you could smoke all the hemp in the world and you won't get high. That's when I really became a believer, because my headaches that I was having just randomly went away. The aches and pains in my body, the inflammation in my joints, it's gone. And I'll be sore after I go and run around, play hoops or play handball or get real active. I'm going to be sore, but it's a good sore.
Sure.
And I don't have the achy pains that keep me in a bad mood. And that's really what was happening. Those pains and those daily headaches, when I didn't know when they would come, were really putting damper on my daily living and the way I felt that day to day. And so when I tried those oils and that all started changing, that's when I really became a believer, and I knew there were more guys out there than just myself that could really benefit from this. And at least getting the knowledge in their hands and giving it to them so they could think about it was what I started doing and advocating. The Bright Lights Fade was a program, a campaign we ran to try to raise funds and do some research to find out if cannabis could help, you know, prevent some of these ailments and some of these troubles that former players were dealing with post-career, and also if the current players that used were finding some kind of relief, whether it be from pain, the stress or anxiety, or possibly protecting their brains. And so we really should spend time talking more about cannabis, not just marijuana and that stereotypical, you know, stoner image, but hemp, because you don't get high when you take hemp oils. You don't. You can take them as a pill form under your tongue, as a tincture, topically. You can rub them on your body. So there's a use for this. It's just educating people, and so that's why I got involved. And more players started getting involved, and so far it's become quite a cause for us to be involved with. And I think that the more we can educate people and at least put it in their corner and let them decide, you know, we're doing good for humanity.
And it's still the most frequent question I get asked, like, well, how does he smoke it? And I just go, wow, yeah, we do have some education to give. He doesn't smoke anything. So the cannabis plant, and that's what we refer to it as Realm of Caring. So the term, you know, marijuana isn't its scientific name. So we refer to it as cannabis. That's how I'll refer to it. And the cannabis plant is made up of over 400 natural components in the plant, over 100 what they call cannabinoids. So these are identified natural chemical components of the plant that have some medicinal value. The two that you've probably heard of are THC, tetrahydrocannabinol. That's why we call it THC, because it's a mouthful, and it is the psychoactive component of the plant. And it also has a lot of medical benefits as well. And then CBD or cannabidiol. What Zakai takes is high in CBD. This is non-psychoactive. This is an incredibly powerful anti-inflammatory. It's a neuroprotectant. It modulates pretty much every regulatory system in our body. We actually have an endocannabinoid system in our body that the plant molecule can bind to or modulate those systems. It's the largest regulating system in our body, and it's responsible for homeostasis or balance in our body. So if the product has less than 0.3% THC, then it's considered hemp. And I'm sure you're familiar with hemp milk and hemp oil, and, you know, you can get hemp seeds to put on your salad, and those are really great sources of very enriched foods that you can eat that are beneficial for us. But then there's a hemp plant that's particularly high in CBD, cannabidiol. And so what my son takes is a product called Charlotte's Web, and this is a hemp-based product, so it's grown under a research and development license here in Colorado, and it's classified as hemp, and so it's being shipped, you know, everywhere. And so what he takes is, it is a tincture, so they extract the cannabinoids out of the plant and put it in a carrier oil. So we prefer the coconut oil. There's also olive oil, and so his is just in a coconut oil base, and we just give him a dropper full of that.
Okay.
So he just takes it in his mouth. He doesn't smoke anything.
It's really, it's science at the highest level. And I think, you know, I hope it's not that the generation before us, the privileged, you know, white owners of the NFL teams don't wait until they can actually make money off of this before they're interested. Instead, I hope they see the benefits that their players can get. And get, you know, we're not rolling joints on the sideline or having bong hits in the locker room. I mean, these are tinctures that help protect the brain.
Tinctures that help protect the brain should be music to the ears of the NFL. Yet this past spring on ESPN's national morning radio show, Mike and Mike, Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL, showed us he's uninformed on the topic of medicinal cannabis. The co-host, Mike Golic, was describing how our country's perception is changing towards cannabis when the black cloud of Roger Goodell chimed in, and I quote, "You still have to look at a lot of aspects of marijuana use. Is it something that can be negative to the health of our players? Listen, you are ingesting smoke. That's not usually a very positive thing," people would say.
That's what he led with? That you're ingesting smoke?
Yeah, with a national audience on the topic of cannabis use in professional football, the first concern brought up by the commissioner of the NFL was the fact that players are ingesting smoke. Goodell goes on to say it does have an addictive nature.
Well, not as addictive as the opiates and pain medications that Jake talked about being forced upon players to get them on the field for games. And Jake believes cannabis is a way to get out of the cycle of those highly addictive and high-powered pain meds.
Well, the commish says, we really want to help our players, but I want to make sure the negative consequences aren't something that we can be held accountable for years down the road.
It's proven a lot of soldiers that come back that have had mild traumatic brain injuries, the ones that have used cannabis, their brains are coming back faster or are not as damaged from this stuff. So when we talk football, John, you know it's a violent game. It's not going to go away. The hits and the collisions and the falling and hitting your head on the ground and the linemen, people think the game is safer, but the linemen in the interior, they still fire off and hit each other in the head hundreds of times in a day. If we can help those guys and hopefully convince the powers that be in the NFL that there's validity to this medicine to help these brains possibly not go through, you know, the dying of the cells and the concussions and the subconcussive hits that are really the damaging ones.
Sure.
And I think there's validity there to having players at least have the option to take medicinal cannabis and not get punished. And that's the thing. If you look at across the league, it's not like five or six guys only are using cannabis. There's a lot of guys in the league using cannabis and putting their careers at risk because it makes them recover quicker or feel better or deal with the stress, the anxiety, whatever it is. We got to look, like DeMaurice Smith of the NFLPA said, we need to look at having a less punitive approach to this. So guys that are using it correctly and not abusing it can do that without risking their livelihoods. And then this leads us to the tough question is how do you convey that message yet not tell the youth, hey, it's okay to use marijuana.
Right.
It's not good to use anything like that a lot, but there is a medicinal value to it that we have to continue to educate people about. And I think once the powers that be see that, hey, we can protect our players, we'll find out whether they really do care about the players or if they're just worried about making more and more money. The truth will come out, and then they can't hide from it.
Thanks for listening to Going Deep, Sports in the 21st Century. Our conversation with the former All-Pro and All-American quarterback, Jake Plummer, is far from over.
And Heather Jackson, the mom with the most from the realm of caring, is just getting started. I hope you'll listen to the second half of our visit with this formidable team.
Remember, a win for Going Deep is if you wonder, investigate, and notice things in a new way.
When it comes to cannabis, I'm seeing everything in a new way. You've been listening to Going Deep, Sports in the 21st Century from the studios of Blue Ridge Public Radio, NPR for Western North Carolina. Tell us what you think of the show by emailing us at goingdeep@bpr.org. And make sure you like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter @ShoopsGoingDeep.